Next item. The adoption of the March 11th, 2021 Firefighter Advisory Committee meeting minutes.
Okay, I'll take a motion.
Motion to adopt, sir.
Second.
Any motion's been made and accepted? Any comments, discussion? Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
So moved.
Report from the Curriculum and Testing Committee regarding possible changes to the certification curriculum manual as follows. A, basic aircraft rescue fire suppression curriculum. B, basic fire inspector curriculum. And C, plans examiner curriculum.
So, good morning. Have in front of you some changes to some of the curriculum that the Curriculum and Testing Committee have been working on.
Pat, do you have your mic on?
I thought I saw Grace turn it on. Let's see. How about now? Is that better? Worse.
Who is this guy? This is a new guy. We haven't seen this guy in a long time.
How about now?
We can hear you better.
Okay.
All right. So the first one we're going to look at is the basic aircraft rescue fire suppression curriculum. The changes that were made were in response to changes in NFPA documents as well as some changes in some of the reference materials. I think what you'll find predominantly out through here is some instructor notes. Those are essentially out of the appendix section of the applicable NFPA standard for our firefighters. You'll also see some changes to the equipment that's involved for offering an ARF program. And then last but certainly not least are changes to the reference materials. As you look through your documents, you'll see there are several reference materials that have strike-throughs. A good majority of those are web-based links that are no longer valid. They're all broken links. So the committee took that out. We tried to pare it down to really just kind of the important materials that are going to be needed in order to conduct the aircraft rescue firefighting curriculum. You'll also note that the NFPA changed it from aircraft rescue firefighter to airport firefighter. So for years we've all called it ARF, now I guess it's AF, I don't know. But anyway, that's NFPA doing, that's not us. That's the only reason I make that statement. So. Are there any questions about the AF or ARF curriculum, proposed changes there?
So, Pat, the instructor's notes, those are not, I mean, I, as I'm looking through it, and I looked through it before, that looks like some pretty important stuff. Is it hands-on that they're going to do, or is it like the flowing and the...
I think the instructor notes are kind of more of an emphasis to the training providers. This is what you need to focus on, or these are some areas that are important. And again, they're attached to the appendix that is published by NFPA. And we do that in some of our other curriculum, but they're not delineated visually. They're not as delineated in the other curricula as they are in the ARF book. So, and the other thing to note too is there in the old curriculum there was a fair amount of material that used to be made available to the public, but is no longer for security reasons and so on and so forth. So a lot of that had to come out, but I think the committee felt like some of these items, at least for training purposes, needed to stay in. So, and I'm not the resident ARF expert by any stretch of the imagination. We had a subcommittee of experts that worked on this. They put that together.
He's working on that.
Sir, good morning. Has the test banks been updated for the new references for the examinations that's going to be taking place with this curriculum?
I'm going to have to defer to Cliff. Do you know if that committee, if they looked at those?
They're currently working at looking at the test banks and stuff like that, and taking stuff out that doesn't apply. And the reason it's taking them so long is Sam wants to make sure that everything is vetted vetted, and it can be, they can look at the test questions and tell you where the test questions come from if somebody has a question about it. So we're currently doing that right now.
Thank you.
Any other questions regarding the aircraft?
Well, one last question, Pat. On
sure.
At the end of the document, the equipment list, there were several items delineated. Is that from the committee's recommendation as well?
Yes.
Okay.
That is their recommendation. Again, they are our resident experts in this subject matter, and they're the ones who made these recommendations.
Okay. Great.
So, in these instructor notes, do they perform actually any of this, or is any of it mandated to be performed, like on the skills things?
Without looking at each one of them, I couldn't tell you. I think some of them are more focused on make sure you cover this in your class, and then some of it may be truly skills related. But I look at it this way. I think anything that this agency can do to help the instructors prepare and teach for the class, that's valuable. Whether it's mandated or not, you know? I mean, we could argue all day about just teaching the minimums, but that doesn't really always get the job done.
No.
And as you all well know, a lot of our codes and standards are written to the minimum. So is that really what you want your certified personnel to be, is
right,
minimally qualified, or do you want them to really know things about their profession and how to function in the field? So anything that we can do to help them, I think, is valuable, even if it's something as simple as an instructor note. And I'll also remind you because ARF is a mandatory certification, that's why there is a full curriculum. Remember, our volunteer curriculum, we don't have a lot of these details because it is a voluntary certification. But mandatory, we do.
Hey, Jim, also to build on Pat's answer about the reasoning for the instructor notes, you're going to start seeing the curriculum be the same in every discipline. We're trying to get away from one discipline looking different from another discipline. We want it to all lay out the same, be formatted the same. That just makes it easier on the instructors and the training facilities. And when the ad hoc committee looked at this, they looked at the new basic structure firefighter curriculum that has the instructor notes in it, and they absolutely loved it. And they ran with it because they said that it needs to mirror the other mandatory certifications too in the format and layout of it. So
I think it's all excellent information. That's my point.
I
think it's great information. Yeah. And I'm wondering if it's just a suggestion to the instructor or if it's actually going to be passed on. That's what I'm wondering, how we ensure that it gets passed on, because it's all good information.
Correct.
Well, and I think some of these too, I think each one kind of has its own character. You know, for example, this one, instructor note 200, A.4.3.1, and I read to you, the use of pressurized flammable gas or flammable liquid is acceptable for this simulation depending on the square footage of the local training simulators and the flow rate of the assigned application device, so on and so forth. That's more of an explanatory note. So I think you're going to see a blend. You're going to see some explanatory notes. You're going to see some that are instructional notes, and then perhaps some that are skill notes. Again, I think it helps to have that information so that we don't get a lot of questions, you know? Because every time there's a question asked, there's a chance of getting a different answer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's just the way life is. Anything else on aircraft?
So I think we should approve these separately rather than all at one time on agenda three. So I'll entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion to approve it.
Hey, Jason Collier, motion.
Second.
Can read a second. Any discussion? Any comments? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? So moved.
So B, basic fire inspector curriculum.
So on the basic fire inspector curriculum, as you recall, we pulled out plan examiner from that requirement. We separated it These documents did not include that separation. So really, all you're seeing here is the cleanup of the document that eliminates that section on plan examiner, since it's no longer appropriate to the fire inspector certification. It is a standalone certification. So that's really all you're seeing there.
You did that on both of them. You took the one and two out of plans and that. So
exactly. We did the exact same thing for item C, which is coming up, plan examiner. We took all the inspector stuff out. So again, it's just cleaning up to make sure the language is all consistent within that curriculum manual for each chapter.
I'll make a motion to approve the changes of the B.
Just B or B and C?
You said do them separately.
Well, so. Let's do them separately. For the sake of making this simple, we'll do it separately.
I'll second the motion.
Any discussion? Any comments from the field? Okay, all those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? So moved.
C, plan examiner curriculum.
I also make a motion to accept C with the changes in the plans review, removing Inspector 1 and 2 out of it.
Second.
I have a second. Jim Reedy, second. All those in favor? Or any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? So moved.
Item number 4, discussion and possible action on proposed amendments to 37 Texas Administrative Code, Part 13, Chapter 421, Standards for Certification, 421.17, Requirement to Maintain Certification.
Mr. Chairman, quite honestly, because of COVID and a few other things, some of the certification renewal became kind of challenging or complicated. So this rule recommendation is to give staff, or at least the executive director, a little bit of latitude when certain circumstances that really aren't addressed in the rules are there. And so without getting into a lot of detail, because I can't, an individual fails to renew their certification in October. So they become what is classified as late. So they're still able to renew it whenever they get ready, but they're late. So they roll around to next October. It's time for them to renew. And in order to renew, they're going to have to pay the certification fee plus the late fee. And Cliff's sitting there to help me. I think I got this right. But you get to the end of October, just like with everybody, if you don't renew by the end of October, you're late. Well, you can't be late twice. You can only be late once. So if you go essentially a whole year without being certified and then you don't renew again, you lose your certification. So let's say in this instance an individual misses 1 year, he's late, and when the recertification period rolls around, he's incapacitated in the hospital. But 2-3 days afterwards, he's finally got all his, he's getting his affairs in order again, life is good, and he realizes what's happened, and he calls us. Well, the rules address it only for military people that go, you know, so long without having their certification. But if you look in 419, it allows for us to have a rule to make an exception based on good faith, clerical errors, and things of that nature. So there was one instance in the last certification period where we spent a great deal of time working with an individual, and based on the statute, I made a decision to let him renew based on the circumstances. But there's not really a good way to capture that in the rules. So the reason for this simplistic language that looks very broad and wide open is just that. I think the staff needs the latitude based on a certain particular circumstance. We should be able to, and it would be a discussion. You know, I mean, the certification folks would go to their manager, he'd come to me, and we'd talk about it. But it's not a gimme. But I mean, depending on the situation, we need the latitude to say you're renewed. You know, we can waive that late fee or whatever we need to do in that case. So
we're not really changing procedures here. We're
not changing procedures. I think we're I think we're taking something that's in 419 that we're able to do, and we're just kind of covering it here, but it's so broad, there's no good way to write it. There's not a good way to put that. You can't put every situation that would come up. So I went with some very vague language that even when I read it, scared the hell out of me, and it would cause me to question it sitting here and in a commission meeting. So that's the explanation for it, and that's where we're at.
Yeah,
I'm sorry COVID, that took so long.
Yeah, before COVID, we didn't know there was that. So
like, you know, the possibility always existed, but I think it was amplified a little bit. And there's a lot more to the story I'm not going to get into here, but anyway, this would help us moving forward.
Okay. There's a lot of people that are confused if they go to October 31st and don't renew and they become late and then they think they know they have what they call a year grace period to get their certification back. What they don't realize is when they go in there and pay that late fee and that certification fee, they're not renewing the certifications to become current. They're just renewing the certifications from the year before. So their certifications, by all means, legal-wise and everything like that, are actually still late because they haven't paid the current year's certification fees and late fee. So they get kind of confused because they have to do it twice. So this here just kind of gives some kind of leeway with stuff like that. So that's what a lot of people are confused about. So.
Any other questions? I'll entertain a motion.
I make a motion to accept the language to allow the executive director to make a decision.
Do I have a second?
I'll second it.
Okay. Good. And I think Antonio did it too as well. So, okay. Any other discussion? Any comments from our attendees? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? So moved.
Item number 5, discussion and possible action on proposed amendments to 37 Texas Administrative Code, Part 13, Chapter 435, Firefighter Safety, 435.19, Enforcement of Commission Rules.
Mr. Chairman, this is something that we've heard a lot about for years, about the surprise inspection, and it comes up every time we do a customer satisfaction survey before every session. What happened with in last year was that we had to find a way to continue to do inspections and work around all the lockdowns that were in place because of the coronavirus. And at the same time, we needed to protect our staff who were going into these places and doing these inspections. So we modified a little bit, started working with the department, say we need to get back to doing this thing. We took, I think it was 8 or 9 weeks that we just shut down. We weren't doing anything here. And so the middle of May, we had to get back to business. And so we started working with the departments, trying to identify a single location where crews could rotate through and set their gear out, and the compliance inspector could see it, check it, tell them what's wrong with it, and they could leave, and we minimize the contact for everybody. So we didn't have our guys going into every fire station. The firefighters weren't exposed to a stranger coming in the building. We were complying with everybody's rules. Well, we started getting all this feedback that this is great. A small department, hell, even the larger department said, you know, I was actually able to have everybody here I needed that could answer any question that compliance officer had. And we were able to send you the SOPs ahead of time, so when he got here, we could have a conversation about what needed to be better. So we essentially documented that process. We've looked at it. It's been a year now, so we've kind of did a trial-by-fire evaluation of it. It's worked well. So we presented to the commissioners at their last meeting to change the rule to where that inspection is initiated with an email. And they have to submit documents, as you see here, within 48 hours. So it's not like they can just make up the SOP or whatever they want to do. And quite honestly, every fire department, thankfully, has firefighters. And if somebody's trying to pull a fast one or harm them or be perceived as harming them in any way, we're going to get a complaint. They're going to tell us. We're still finding issues. I mean, we're letting these folks know we're coming. We still find problems. We still find PPE that needs to be replaced. We're still finding SCBAs that don't comply anymore. So they can't just magically make everything go away in 2 years. If they're doing everything right, they're going to be all right. If there's issues there, we're going to find them, whether they know we're coming or not. But we have found this to has proven a lot more successful in the last year, so we're proposing a rule change just to stay with it. We got there on accident, but it we found a way to make it work. It's working.
Sure.
I can only tell you, I mean, obviously, those of y'all that know me, I mean, we've got a little small department. I've only got, you know, 11 full-time career firefighters. But my battalion chief pretty much takes care of those inspections, and he has everything prepared. And he was having surgery whenever y'all were wanting to come out and do the inspection. But by being notified in advance, gave us a chance to reschedule that. So my battalion chief, I could have surely done the inspection, but it's so much easier when Wade's there. I mean, he's got all the information. He can give it to him. I love the process today. But like I said, I'm a little bitty guy in a little bitty department, but I don't know what the bigger guys feel like. But for me, it works good because I can have Wade there. He's intimate with what they want to see. He can give it right to them. It's an easy process. Because like I said, if you would have come out, we could have got through it, mm-hmm. but he would have taken a lot more time to get done than having Wade there. So for me,
but I think that's a good point because what our compliance officers have reported back to Paul and even to me is that the inspections don't take near as long because they're doing so much on the front end. They can read the SOPs. They can make notes about what's wrong. And if you've ever done it, and most of you have from the fire administration side, this guy walks in, I'm here, this is what I want to see. And you're trying to find everything, and most people have it in one place. They can produce it. But he's trying to read it. You're trying to talk to him and ask him questions, and there's no good dialogue. I'm not going to say it's chaotic, but it's rushed, and it takes longer to get somewhere. The guys have found that this is a lot more structured and a lot more productive and beneficial. They're actually having conversations about how to help these departments become more compliant. And, you know, really at the end of the day, if you look at our mission, that's really what we're here for. So, I mean, it makes sense. And yeah, it's something that's been there forever. And I sat where you guys are for a long time, and we just kept saying, oh, it's got to be a surprise. But, man, lo and behold, look, it actually works. So,
well, to Keith's point, even from a larger department like my own, the last inspection we had, all of our continuing education documentation is in one database. Mm-hmm. And we have one gatekeeper who's the password in the computer. And he was going to be off on surgery leave when the last inspection was scheduled. And with the heads up, we were able to make sure that somebody knew how to get into his computer to at least open up the documentation. So yeah. It helped. Other comments or questions from anybody?
I just know I'll kind of back. I guess I've been to three or four of the road shows that Mike and his staff has put on. And that's probably the number one comment I've heard. I've heard it from I was in the Metroplex, so all those people have had it. Heard it. Chief Davis even said it out of Fort Worth, said mm-hmm. he appreciated it. So it's big departments that are saying mm-hmm. this too.
There's some folks in the audience nodding as well.
So, we were down here at the executive conference 2 months ago at A&M. That was I came into that, and that was there's only like three questions, and they were all glad that they went to this. Mm-hmm. So I think the feedback is substantial on that.
Okay, I'll entertain a motion. If there's no other comments or questions,
I'll make a motion to approve the enforcement of the commission rules.
Second.
Vince, you second it?
Yes, sir.
Okay, any other further discussion or comments from anybody? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? So moved.
Thank you.
Item number 6, request from Curtis Dunn, Firefighter Cancer Support Network, regarding firefighter training program.
I haven't heard from Curtis today. When I talked to him last week, he was set to be here, and so I don't know what happened.
I sent an email Monday and Tuesday. I have not heard back from him.
Okay. He did this presentation at the commission meeting. They ask if you all could get the same one so that we start looking at moving forward. And it's all ties in with the Health and Wellness Committee and the injury report and all that. I think it's valuable information. something obviously happened here, and so I'll reach out to Curtis, and we'll make sure he's here for your next one.
Okay.
Item number 7, presentation by David Kerr of the Firefighter Air Coalition regarding firefighter air replenishment systems.
Good morning. Can you hear? Is it on?
Yes, sir. I can hear you.
Oh, good. Good morning. We've got maybe some challenges we're going to see on the video, so, or on the presentation. If you guys can't see, if you want to move over, please feel free to slide your chairs over where you can see what's going on, because it's kind of a long way away. And I'll see if this clicker is going to work. If not, I'm going to go with the mic like this. So the Firefighter Air Replenishment System, it's called FARS. Anybody familiar with it in the room? A couple of 16. Them. Okay, great. Wonderful. Thank you. So it has been around for about 20 years now, but it's just now starting to really get a lot of focus, a lot of attention on firefighter air. And basically what this is it's a standpipe for air in the building. So we've had a standpipe for water forever, but we've been fighting fire with very little air for a long, long time. So we have our one bottle on our back, and we go up, and that's all we've got until we get more bottles bringing up to us. So the picture you see here is an FDC on the left for water, and on the right-hand side is an FDC for air. So at the fire department connection, we can pump air in. My counterpart is Mike Galliano. Mike is a captain from Seattle, retired, and I'm retired fire marshal and deputy chief from Plano. Mike spent 35 years firefighter, captain, truckie. He's done it all. And he wrote a book on air management. He's what I would call an air geek. So he is all about air. And the necessary amount of air that we need, I want to get closer. That's why I thought better. I meant to walk right up to it. What's that? It's on. I'm doing both of them. It's the light's on. It worked a minute ago, I promise. I tested it. It may not be set there. Oh, it's working now. Thank you. So, yeah, this is the top one. Yeah. So, we need air and water for this to operate. Let me get back over here. I'm not standing in front of everybody. Whoop, wrong way. So this is how we got water in the old days, the old bucket brigade. And that's how we've got water. And then we came along with an idea of maybe we could get hoses. And then we came along with the idea of maybe we could put standpipes in buildings and fire pumps. And that technology has really taken off. I mean, who doesn't have a standpipe in the building now? I mean, that's just a commonplace. When it first came about, people go, I don't know. I'm not sure those things are going to work very good. We're only going to trust our hose. We're not going to trust that pipe in the building. Well, that's been over 100 years now. And so today's problem, and this is an interesting case. This is, some of you may have been alive when this thing happened. 1988 was the first interstate bank fire. And if you've gone through any kind of fire classes, you probably studied this fire. You got Los Angeles Fire Department, one of the largest fire departments in the country at the time. And they could not get this thing out. It started on the 10th floor. They had 383 firefighters. That's an unbelievable number of folks. They went through 600 air cylinders trying to put this fire out. And they just could never get ahead of it. Every time they would make some advance, they're out of air. Going down several floors, getting air, coming back up again. It became a real problem for them on that. Now it froze again. I don't think the audio is coming out very good. So, so they're describing what was going on in the interstate fire. I said, we're having audio problems.
It's not very loud.
Yeah, I can't hear it now.
I can hear it.
So I'm going to move on since that audio is not working. Yeah, well, I'm trying to get this thing to click to go to the next slide. So what happened is we've got a fire in a building that was not sprinkled all the way. It was partially sprinkled in there. And so the floors that the fire began on, you can see that the fire is now probably, 1,800, 2,000 degrees. So the problem is this guy's telling you, I was up in the tower, and... things falling down, they couldn't get air, they're trying to get air, his guys just kept running out of air, and they had, they went through multiple bottles of air, and every time they would make an advance, it would beat them back, and so it was a real problem, and we've had the same fires today. In any large city, Dallas, Fort Worth, I've talked to those guys, San Antonio, Houston. These fires still happen. Now, not necessarily to this degree, but we're a sprinkled city in Plano. And I told my mayor, I said, now, on any given day, there's about 100 systems turned off in town. He's like, what? Well, that's not a bad thing. That means people are doing economic redevelopment. They're remodeling their building. They're making it better. Somebody's expanding and taking up more space. But that means everything on that floor is turned off. So just because it's a sprinkled building doesn't mean it's not going to be a manual firefight. You may have a fire on the seventh floor, it's under construction. Those are also very, very likely times to have a fire is when you have a building under construction. So you roll up and you got fire blowing out the seventh floor windows. You go, uh-oh, what's wrong here? Is the system failing? Well, it could be. You could have a set fire. Somebody has overpowered the sprinkler system. But more than likely, that floor is turned off, or two. Sometimes there's two floors turned off. We can still have this same kind of a problem. We have a fire in a sprinkler building that we can't get to quickly. Can you advance me? Thank you. I just not wanting to go. So the problem is we've either got to try to take the bottles up manually up the stairwell, or we've got to put them in an elevator and go up. It's labor intensive. I mean, the video, if we would have played the video all the way through, you would see a mule train of guys just carrying bottles into the building. Just, a whole string of them. Carrying bottles up and bringing empties back down. The cascade system is not fast enough to refill that many bottles. That was the other problem, is that they could not get their cascade system to keep up with the demand that they had. When you're needing 20, 30 balls at a time up there, the cascade system just couldn't do it, could not keep up. So it was very slow, very inefficient on there. Next slide. Now, some of you may laugh at this picture. Some of you say, I never have seen 178 pounds since I was in junior high. But firefighters, what the idea is that looking at how much weight we keep adding on to ourselves, going into these buildings. So you're going into a high rise, you've got to have all this stuff with you. And so, now you have to shed something to start carrying bottles. So your weight could almost double pretty quickly. And if you're climbing upstairs, how many of you walk the stairs just in your civilian clothes every day? Yeah, some do, some don't. 10, 12 stories? Probably not. I'll do two or three in a parking garage or something like that. But beyond that, I'll ride in the car. I'll ride in the elevator car. Next slide.
15 minutes on the
stove. So this is just going back to saying the problem hasn't gotten any better. In fact, it's gotten worse because now we have fires that are burning faster and hotter because of the stuff we're putting into buildings nowadays. Everything's plastic. Everything's hydrocarbons. And flashover is happening much quicker now. And we've got this other thing called the open office concept, like the room we're in right now. It's totally open, so there's not a lot of breaks in the building. The whole floor could be open, and The code now allows you to not have to put in an elevator lobby. If you pressurize the elevator shaft, you can do away with the elevator lobby. So now you've got nothing but two stairwells and an elevator shaft, and the rest of the floor is totally open. So you can have a real problem with those types of facilities. Next slide, please. Pretty interesting looking at this thing from a helicopter view and stuff falling out of the building, and your ladders can't reach it. You've got problems now where you can't get people in there, and they're having to actually, they were using plywood and riot shields over the hoses, trying to keep stuff from falling and cutting the hoses in two, and protecting firefighters going into the building. They're holding shields up over their head going into the building because of the crap falling down. So it's a huge problem if you get a fire like this and then it starts buckling the steel, glasses falling out. Yeah, it's just a real problem. They burned, I think, 10 floors in this thing. It's how many they actually burned on it. Next slide, please. So the solution is pretty easy. We can now get air to you in the stairwell right next to where your standpipe is. It's a stainless steel tube. It's a very, very thick tube, but very thin in size. So I'll pass this around. This is the actual pipe that goes in. You're not going to cut this thing anytime soon. This is some serious stainless steel that goes in. It goes into the building. It's protected for 2 hours horizontally. Once it goes vertical in the building, then it's inside the stair shaft, so it's totally protected. So it's a small hole that right next to the standpipe that goes up the shaft. So it's pretty easy to install. Next slide. Back up one. Sorry. Okay. So the FDC can be three ways. It can be on the left. You see is a surface mount. Upper right is a flushed or recessed, and at the bottom is a remote. Just like you have a remote FDC for water, you can have a remote FDC for air. So especially if you've got an all-glass building, you got those kind of problems, you can't just connect it to the side of the building. It's all glass. So we can do remote, which also helps if you're always limited on the amount of hose reel you've got on a light and air truck. So you got a light and air truck shows up, you can't splice that hose. It is what it is. So sometimes you want to have that thing a little bit more remote or even away from the FDC. The water FDC, because the first engine gets there, hooks up, now you block the light and air truck. Next. There's an option that you can do. It's not required by code, but the option is to put in a small compressor and a small cascade system. And this has enough storage capacity in it to fill 50 air bottles while you're waiting on the light and air truck to get there. Even as big as Dallas is and Fort Worth and those folks, the light and air truck may be a ways getting there. Traffic problems and getting it there and getting it hooked up is not going to be when the first alarm gets there. It's going to be later on into the fire. So having this system here will let you put in 50 air changes or 50 bottle changes prior to the air getting there. This is what it looks like. It can be recessed in the walls. It can be surface mounted. Either way, in the fire control room or wherever you decide to put this, you'll have two bottles like you're seeing sitting right there. The system is constantly under 4,500 PSI pressure or 3,200 or 45, whatever you are, 5,500 now, somebody can go in 6,000. It's crazy. So it will handle those pressures. So the system is constantly under supervision. It's constantly pressurized. And it's constantly puffing air into this box you're seeing above the tanks. Now, that box is monitoring all the air that's required to be monitored by NFPA 1989. 1989 is the same standard you have to follow for your air compressors in your fire stations. It follows the same rigor as that. It's testing for carbon monoxide, carbon dioxide. It's testing for water, hydrogen, nitrogen. It's all those things that it's monitoring. It has 6 different sensors on there. It gives you parts per million, exactly what it is. But it's also got the old idiot lights like you had on a 1965 Chevy. It lights you on or off. It didn't tell you what the oil pressure was. It's like, oh, light came on. I don't know how bad it is. This will tell you if they got a red light comes on. It'll tell you system's bad and it will not deliver air. It's required to be tested quarterly, just like your stations. It's required to be tested quarterly on there. An independent company called Trace Analytics out of San Antonio did an independent study on this. They did over 7,000 samples of different FAR systems across the country, and it meets or exceeds NFPA standards and meets or exceeds station air compressors. So it's very reliable. At the same control panel is at the FDC for air. When you hook up there, it's going to tell you, are you pumping good air in? If your light and air truck's not pumping good air in, you kind of would like to know that too. So it's going to monitor your air coming in as well. Next slide, please. So there are two types of systems that you can refill with. One is a rupture containment system. This takes up a lot of room on the floor, and you have to take your bottle off and refill it just like you would if you're downstairs in a cascade system. Next slide. The one that's most commonly used is one called an emergency fill station. This is where a firefighter opens this box up, and I've got a sample over here. On the left-hand side is the firefighter connection for the FDC. Very simple. They plug in. Here's a control to tell you what your incoming and outgoing pressure is, and then the monitoring all the different gases and required systems right here. Very simple. For the firefighter to use it, break glass, open the box up, pull the connection out. It hits your RIC UAC either in the front or the back. You can either have a 2, 4, or 6 station connection, and then you just turn the valve and fill up. Anywhere from 45 seconds to 2 minutes, you can determine how fast you want it to fill on there. Very simple. If you're out of air, you don't want complicated.
You want air, you want it now.
You want one over here, and again, this thing opens up, and it's made for a gloved hand, so it's easy to grab a hold of, easy to see how the system is going to operate very, very efficiently for you. The other thing is you never have to go off air, so you're not breathing nasty stuff. So from a firefighter cancer standpoint, we know that's a real problem for us is breathing that nasty stuff, even for a short period of time. Next slide, please. So here we're coming up. Next slide. Open up the box. Next slide. You can click each other. So if you know, I can't reach that thing back, I can't see it. Okay, good. You turn around. I'll pop you. I turn, you pop me, and we got air. All right, now, boom. Next slide. Next. So now we hook up. So this shows it's just a quick connect. So it's very easy. Everything is made for a gloved hand, and we've got air. We're back online. Now you go, well, you know, we need air for firefighting. We get that. But there's 3 other times you're going to need air in a building. Search and rescue. I'm going to tell Chief DeYeer to take his crew, fire's on 7. Go search 9, 10, and 11. He's got to go up. And now he gets up there. Well, if he runs out of air, how many floors down is the rehab floor? I can't remember. I got to go down 7 floors, 8 floors, whatever it is, get air, and then go back up again. Well, what if you find somebody down up there and his bell rings? You're going to leave the guy? Well, you're going to get in trouble too. Well, if you can get him to the stairwell, you can get air, and then you can rescue, breathe them down. So it really is. And then the other part is that we now cannot go off of air for salvage and overhaul. Right? I mean, gosh, you know that soon as that fire was out, you threw all the crap off and you started, just breathing whatever to got to stay on air. And the 4th is going to be fire investigators. They got to be on air too. So if you're up there doing a long-term investigation, you may be on air for several hours doing an investigation until you get a clear signal from the air samples that are being taken up there. Next slide, please. Thank you. So again, we're going to continue on. Next slide. So currently there's about 19, 20 states that have different requirements. There's well over 100 jurisdictions now across the country that have these. And we're also finding them in big box stores. That's like these million square foot Amazon buildings and those types of things. You know, the majority of the time, we were talking last night, sometimes just let them burn. But if there's somebody trapped in there, you can't do that. They go, well, there's somebody in there. If you got a big FedEx facility, you may have lots of folks working in that place. You may have to do a search and rescue on that thing. So some big boxes are now putting them in, or some departments are putting them in their big boxes out there. Also, we're seeing them used in tunnels, subways, underground, connections, those types of things, where you got to send somebody down there. That's really a bad situation. You really haven't got much chance on that one. This is the first one that was put in Texas. It was at Granite Park in Plano. We were the first to adopt it in the state, and that the first system went in. There are now, 25, 30 cities in across the state that have it, and there's probably 30 systems in the Metroplex now, that buildings that have these systems in them, ready to go. Next slide. Here's a map. It shows it to you. I've got some handouts I'll give you when this is done, and this map is in there. The cities that are in black have already adopted Appendix L. So this made it into the International Fire Code after years of testing and years of going through improving the system. It's now Appendix L starting in 2015. So this will be, it's a couple cycles now that it's in the code. And those cities that are in red have committed to looking at and adopting this code. Dallas is committed to doing it. Fort Worth, Arlington, San Antonio, Bexar County is looking at it very, very strongly. Bexar County would have already adopted it, but COVID, shut them down with the commissioner's court. So they're waiting now for the 21 code. And they decided to back it up a little bit. So you can see it's not just in one part of the country. It's the state. It's all over the state, from Laredo all the way up. Next slide, please. So one thing to remember is no cost to the fire department. It's no cost to you. There's no new equipment you need. It's what you've got will work just fine. It's all designed to be used with our current technology, our current things there. So if you practice buddy breathing, then this is the same thing. You're just going to get a hose from the wall instead of a buddy breathe. Same thing. The only thing you have to do is you have to, when you adopt the 21 code coming up, you just have to adopt Appendix L. So you say, I'm going to adopt the 2021 code, and you can pick what appendixes you want. But if you don't call those appendixes out, you don't get them. So it truly is an option for everyone to consider and make a conscious decision that you want to do that. Next slide. So we're not immune from it. Fires are going to continue to happen. Our best efforts, we sprinkle all the buildings we can, but I'm a sprinkler guy, and they work most of the time. But again, if they're turned off, not going to work. And so that happens a lot out there. Or if the fire is too big. Sprinkler systems have different strengths. And so if you put too much stuff in there, you can overpower the sprinkler system and it will fail. Next slide. So again, we need air and we need water. And we now have a solution to that. And this stairwell on the right-hand side, you can see we have the box there. We have the standpipe. Everything is neatly right there for us. And we have air right there. Next slide. I think that should be it. So, again, here's the equipment's over here if you want to look at it during your break. But and if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer those.
Any questions or comments from anybody?
Thank you, Dave.
Oh, I'm sorry, Jim, do you have something?
Is it designed for emergency use or for... supplementing poor manpower, poor amounts of manpower?
Yeah, it's both. So if you run out of air, you're going to get air immediately. But also, it greatly lets you use your resources where they're most needed. Wasting resources running up and down stairwells, you're going to exhaust people. They're going to be exhausted by the time you carry bottles up and carry back down, then carry back up, carry back down. You're going to be, those guys are going to be in rehab pretty quick. Doing that, so you can, those resources could be better used in another part of the firefighting situation.
Okay, thank you for your
thank
time,
you very much.
David. I appreciate
thank you for
it.
Your time.
Item number 8, request from Kevin Price regarding proposed rule changes to 37 Texas Administrative Code, Part 13, Chapter 429, Fire Inspector and Plans Examiner, Subchapter A, Minimum Standards for Fire Inspector Certification, 429.3, Minimum Standards for Basic Fire Inspector Certification.
Has anybody heard from him?
I don't believe he's here. So you've got the information in front of you with his letter. It's up to y'all if you want to discuss it, or we'll try to get him here again.
Mr. Chair, I did reach out to Pat McAuliffe since he's over testing curriculum on this question, mainly based on Mr. Price's information in here talking about he looked at the higher education. So I contacted Pat and said, does that exist or not? Obviously, he's kind of our resident expert in some of that, being also with the community college. Mm-hmm. And I don't know which way you want to go, but I think we ought to at least have Pat tell us if some of this information is correct or not, so that we can, when he does come, we'll have some information if Pat's not here at the next meeting.
Sure.
So I received the letter, and I was kind of a little confused in the wording. Basically, it says a petition that hazmat 1, 2, and 3 be removed from the list of courses as they relate to hazmat awareness operations and technician, respectively, for the course catalogs for Lone Star College. I cross-referenced the Texas Higher Education Coordinating Board course list and found no such courses listed anywhere either. Well, I don't know where he was looking, but when you look at WECM, which is the Workforce Education Curriculum Manual, that has every course, every workforce course is offered and approved through the Texas Higher Education Coordinating Board is listed in that manual. And in that manual is FIRT 1315, which is HAZMAT 1, 1345, which is HAZMAT 2, FIRT 2345, which is HAZMAT 3, and FIRS 2450, which is specific to hazardous materials technicians. I can tell you a little bit of the history. Before the state had the hazmat technician certification, those first three hazmat courses were somewhat aligned to awareness, operations, and technician. That was kind of how the structure was before the fire commission actually had some of those certifications available. Then when the fire commission did introduce the hazmat technician certification, that's where a standalone hazmat tech course was added to the state's course inventory. So when he says that they're not there, what he might be referring to is there's not a specific awareness course that's titled awareness, and there's not one that's labeled or titled operations within the coordinating board weapon guidelines. The reason for that is because this agency, we do not offer a standalone hazmat awareness and a standalone operation certification that anyone can get. We're not there. I've been a strong proponent for that, but it just there's some issues that we need to work through before we can initiate that. So again, I don't really know when he says I'm not finding it, because clearly it is there. I struggle to think that if you took out the hazmat component, that you would get any kind of hazmat references in any of those other college courses that are listed. And those certifications require some hazmat components. So I think it's a little bit of a slippery slope to remove the hazmat 1, 2, or 3 as it's stated here. Is it a perfect fit for all of these courses to fit right into inspector certification or to fit right into fire investigator? The answer is no, but that wasn't the intent when this rule was written. This rule was written a long time ago when we were trying to allow people to use their education, their experience, their expertise in order to get these certifications. So this is kind of one of those old rules that have never left us. I don't think there's that many people that use this option in order to get their certification. I think today, most people just take the certification course, take the test, and that's normally how it's done. So this was a provision that was made to help get the certification going some years ago. If that's the route you're choosing, that's fine. I think it's a very slippery slope if you take away the hazmat requirement. That would be my suggestion.
And as I asked Pat, I also realized both these are actually standalone certifications. So you do not have to be a firefighter or have any hazmat training in rookie school or anything else to take these. You can be in the fire marshal's office in the county sheriff's department and go take the investigator's class and have no understanding of hazmat at all. So if you use that option to take to get your certification. So removing that, to me, you start pulling some of the information that might be needed.
Mm-hmm. Does anybody have any other questions or comments? So we still need to have a motion. If
you don't have to, you don't have to do anything. I mean, it's up to you. Or you could,
well, we could,
or you
right?
could,
we could,
you could motion to recommend or not recommend the change.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a motion to not recommend the change based on the information from the curriculum and testing chairman.
I'll second it.
Okay. Any further discussion? Anybody comments from the audience?
Will a response be provided to the individual stating what just occurred?
Well, it goes back to the commission, so no decision's made. This is your recommendation. Your recommendation will go with this back to the commission. Once they make a decision, then yeah, I'll send him a correspondence where we're at.
And it could be that he would show up at the commission.
It could be.
And state his case. And he may share some other information that's not available in this letter. But certainly that would be helpful before any kind of final decision is made. I think.
But we don't have that now, so. Okay. All right. That being said, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? So carried.
Thank you, Pat.
Item number 9, request from Kevin Price regarding proposed rule changes to 37 Texas Administrative Code, Part 13, Chapter 4 through 31, Fire Investigation, Subchapter A, Minimum Standards for Arson Investigator Certification, 431.3, Minimum Standards for Basic Arson Investigator Certification.
Go ahead, Jim.
Mr. Chairman, I would think at the very least an arson investigator should have some kind of working knowledge of hazmat in the operation or the process of his job. So I would make a motion that we also do not recommend this change based on the previous testimony by the curriculum testing chairman.
Any awesome. Other comments or questions? You second?
I said investigator on the first one, which I got him on the
so
first,
we have a motion.
First example. Yeah, no. I second that.
All right. But we have a motion and a second. Any additional comments, questions? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? So moved.
Item number 10, discussion of the 2020 data collected on firefighter injuries and possible action on developing recommendations to be submitted to the commission for approval and submission to the State Fire Marshal's Office.
Mr. Chairman, that's the second round of this. You remember at your last meeting in March, I can't even remember what month it is right now. We gave you the preliminary report that Grace has worked on. This is round two. It's up to date as of, 2 weeks ago, I think the numbers are what they are. Some of the recommendations have already been incorporated, but again, we're looking for recommendations before we send it back to the commissioners in July to finally adopt it and send it on to the state fire marshal.
Okay. Grace?
Good morning, everyone. Grace Wilson here. I don't really have anything further to add, but I'm here to answer questions and talk about it if you want to.
Well, I'd like to say, Grace, thanks for all the hard work and the changes that you made on this. Especially on the executive summary, putting it right there, nice, flashy, reminding departments that if it's followed through workers' comp, then it must be submitted to y'all as well, and then also including in there cancer. So I appreciate that. Thank you so much. And for those that are listening in and that are present here today, you got two pieces of legislation that are sitting on the governor's desk right now to be signed into law, and that's Senate Bill 22 and House Bill 2073. Which will also impact those. That's one of those is the COVID, identifying it as a workers' comp issue, and the number two is a quarantine bill. So those are something that once they're signed into law, you'll see changes on this as well, because it has a retroactive date for you to file COVID as a workers' comp. So
I'd like to just pile on the block with the nice excellent. Should get everybody's attention, you would think.
So. You know, I believe at the last meeting we discussed about in the future having the consistent format,
mm-hmm.
so it'd be easy to compare
mm-hmm.
the abstract from year to year.
Yeah. And the other thing I was going to point out is that as I've read through this since the initial one and now this one again in the last week or so, I know initially that number of 74% reporting jumped out at all of us. And it is the lowest I think we've seen in 11 years of tracking this. But as I started reading the numbers, reading the information, talking to the compliance people, I mean, they push folks to do this. They have to report to us injuries that are reported to workers' comp. They do not have to tell us about injuries that are not reported to workers' comp. I think we all know there's a fine line in there of reported and not reported. So, are we getting 100%? No. But the one important point I want to make, I think we're actually seeing the fruits of our labor for the last 20 years around here, in that our injuries are going down. I mean, if you read this, 8% of the injuries in 2020 were on the fire ground. Well, we didn't stop having fires because of COVID. Nothing changed that. We're seeing fewer injuries there. If you look on page 102 and 103, and you might not be able to, I don't know if you printed this in color or not, but in the color report, there are numbers in red in each of those columns. And I asked Grace to highlight the numbers that indicated the lowest number of injuries for that category. And for 2020, eight of the reported injuries for 2020 were the lowest recorded ever. So then you take those two pieces of information and you realize that we've got 340 training facilities out there. We've got 393 regulated fire departments. We have a large number of those regulated departments that are standalone 1- and 2-person fire marshal offices or law enforcement agencies that do arson investigation and all. So when you look at 556 departments reported an injury or an individual with more than one injury from an incident, and you see we're missing about 200 departments in there, I think it's safe to make the assumption we had 200 departments that didn't experience an injury last year. And so I don't want to get hung up on the negative side of only 74% reported. Yeah, I'm the guy that 6 years ago pushed back about going in and reporting a zero every month. That was me, all right? And I still find that a little silly. I think we, looking at this in that light, 74% is probably telling us we're doing pretty good in the state of Texas. You look at that comparison, our 19 numbers to the NFPA 19 numbers, we're doing good. When you look at the whole United States and then you look at Texas, we're doing well here. So, can we do better? We can always do better, and I think we always strive to make it safer. But I think overall, that 74% probably shouldn't be as alarming when you start really looking at the details of this and understanding that we're not seeing the injuries that we were. You know, the two highest injuries are EMS responses and fire station life. Well, we probably need to dig into that. I think the EMS responses this year, hands down, we know exactly what that was. Everything that was related to COVID exposures or the illness got related back to EMS responses. Working in and around the fire station apparently is now dangerous and firefighting is safe. So I think we need to start taking a better look at that. But overall, I think this is an exceptional report, not only in the detail of it, the way it's presented, but I think the information in there. And you know, the Health and Wellness Committee is taking this serious. I think you're going to see a recommendation from them at the next commission meeting moving forward, requiring that 2 hours of CE every year is actually departments and individuals looking at, reading this injury report and taking a look at it. If that's just a discussion around the kitchen table, I think that's perfect. Because unfortunately, there are a lot of firefighters out there today in Texas that don't even know this report exists. And if you put it on the kitchen table, they have a conversation. Somebody in that group, we've all got them, is going to go back and start analyzing this, and they're going to look at their own department and see where they fit into this. And so I think that's going to be progress, and hopefully that's something that comes out of the next commission meeting. But anyway, that's just my commentary.
I believe we talked at our last meeting about potentially breaking down or identifying better what station activities actually is for future recommendations.
Yes, we did talk about that. And then recommendations.
Page 127, she outlines everything that's given to the commission waiting on recommendations for the report, and that's one of them.
And I remember just personally one of my concerns is there's a section here that refers to SOPs. And virtually everything that happens in a fire station, there is an SOP that pretty much exists. And there seems to be a disconnect as far as all these folks getting injured at a fire station, but nobody seems to be violating an SOP. So perhaps departments should go back and revisit SOPs to see where their most common denominators are for their injuries. So, and I don't know if we can help do that by reporting, you know, if it's a statewide problem or it's just specific departments. Other questions from the committee? Questions or comments from the attendees? Everybody good? Any other questions or comments? So are we good then with page 127? These were the recommendations that we passed on from the last meeting to the commissioners. Do we need to adopt them or tweak them at all, or is everybody good with it?
So I would think that what would be in order is probably a motion at this point, because it is going back to them for final adoption. This is your official look at it. So I would say a motion that says our recommendations are enclosed and we support those, or whatever you all choose to do. But some kind of motion would be necessary here.
Can I ask a question, Grace?
Yes,
so on 127 on the recommendation page, the number 4 says increased cancer reporting prevention, and that whole thing is great. And then it says clean everything often. What does that mean? Clean everything often. Does that mean clean your bunker gear often? Does that mean clean your station often? Does that mean, what does that mean? And in the realm of preventing cancer or trying to prevent cancer, could we instead make some kind of comment about cleaning your bunker gear or following 1851 or doing something to that of that nature?
It was so relaxing, you fell right into that.
At this office.
I'd agree. Something that outlines 1851, I would prefer.
Especially as it's because it's a statutory requirement for us. That was the only thing that kind of jumped out at me. That seems like a very well-meaning statement, but not.
Doesn't really tell us anything.
No.
Yeah. So. But we made the recommendation, or at least the commissioners did. So.
I think that recommendation, if my memory serves me correctly, was from the Health and Wellness Committee last year. Remember, they they went through that whole presentation, and it was just sort of a general statement that, you know, about the whole decline after an incident, and you should be cleaning everything, clean yourself, clean your truck, clean your gear. I think it was just meant to be simple.
So can I make a motion to make a recommendation for an addition to this?
Okay. We can discuss it for sure.
So, or we want to discuss it first, Mr.
Well,
Chairman?
Well, depends on what your recommendation is. So.
All right. So then I'll make a motion that in number four that we add in to follow NFPA 1851. As set out, follow NFPA 1851, as set out in whatever the government code is.
Does that not already exist?
Or to follow 1851 then. If we're talking about increased cancer reporting and prevention activities, part of prevention activities are NFPA 1851. Right. Follow NFPA 1851.
So is that a reminder to do that, or is that a new process? Because I'm under the impression we're already doing that.
Clean everything often is a reminder. I mean, consider early cancer detection is, I don't know, maybe a reminder too. But even if it's just a reminder, I would think it should be included in here.
I may be confused here. This isn't the recommendations from our last meeting. These were the recommendations from last year. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So this is just a reference. So, and this may be a Deb question, and I apologize. I know at our last meeting we had a pretty lengthy discussion, and we had a list of items. And I know if you go back into our archives and look, it just says a motion was made to approve the injury report, and that was it. It doesn't really show our recommendations at that point.
Motions don't show. Motions just are the official action that you take.
So it's just whatever notes we personally took to identify what.
Yeah, I think a lot of it that was made dealt with the actual report, the format and things. And I think Grace has already.
Right, she's already
incorporated those. So.
Okay.
I think that there was a list that was at the end of the injury report that was included in the last commission notebook. So that they. Mm-hmm.
So, Jim, what you're suggesting is adding your comments to the list, not this list that's on page 127. It would be our list.
Yeah. Oh, that works.
But we don't have our list.
Right. Well, how about amending my motion that after reviewing this excellent report, that we'd like mentioned that we should be following 1851, NFPA 1851, as part of cancer prevention activities. And yes, I know we're already supposed to be doing it. And
do we have anything else or any other comments or anything else that you'd like to see added? Anybody else?
I do. Grace, I know last time we talked about roadway, working on roadway. Is that able to be pulled out a little bit better now? That way, there's action that was trying to take place in this last legislation. There's a coalition of fire departments across Texas that are trying to bring that awareness of roadway accidents, especially working near one. And so it'd be nice to be able to track those numbers across the state, because unless you live in the community and you just happen to see a news report that a firefighter was struck on a roadway, it'd be nice to see those things in these reports. That way, some of the practices that are being changed throughout the state could, I guess, become more of a talking point, maybe something for future action into for sure, but to raise awareness for this.
I've got that list in front of me here. I went back to there.
Okay.
Notebook. You want me to read this?
Yeah, that would be very helpful.
Okay. So, recommendations on the injury report from the Firefighter Advisory Committee March 11 meeting. Recommendation / request for the report. You had acknowledged with a notation everywhere COVID has skewed the numbers. Number two was add a new exposure type, contact with a contagious coworker. Number three was add a new injury type, roadway injuries. Number four, from here forward, the report should always look the same. Number five, add a new table or chart that breaks down injuries from station duties. Number six, table eight, types of injuries. Break down the whole chart further so we can see what people were doing that caused their injuries. Recommendations for the fire service. One, reporting should be mandatory. Two, departments need to revisit their SOPs for station duties. If people continue to get injured, do they need new SOPs? And three, in the 2019 injury report, the Health and Wellness Committee recommended firefighters consider early detection testing. Can they be more specific? Which test are we recommending? That's the complete list of recommendations.
So let's do this. Is everybody still comfortable with that list as it is? Well, we can make additions to it here in a second. But is everybody still comfortable with those recommendations to the commission? So having said that, then Jim, you'd like to add 1851, the suggestion or not suggesting the requirement of following 1851 as it's set out?
Yeah, we're already supposed to be following it, so
it's just a reminder, basically.
Maybe a re-emphasis or an emphasis?
You could easily say review review your compliancy towards NFPA 1851, something along those lines.
Yeah.
Okay, is there anything else that you would like to see added to this list of recommendations?
Well, I remember that you had talked about, and I've heard it too, about making some mandatory CEs. Now, we are going to have the report itself is going to be a mandatory CE, right?
I believe that's going to be a recommendation from the Health and Wellness, yes.
Yeah.
So the intent is that we have every year 2 hours set aside of our continuing education hours that would be basically dictated by the commissioners, by the commission. And it would be based on what the reports show, not necessarily year to year, but possibly trending as recommendation of focusing. For example, we could almost discuss here right now that maybe next year, which is not going to happen because it's too short in the process, but somebody needs to revisit station activities if that's where a significant number of our injuries are coming from. What that looks like and how that needs to be solved is a different issue, and that's one of the things that the Health and Wellness Committee is looking into, to what specific recommendations they could make. So it would be a collaborative effort between our committee, the Health and Wellness Committee, and ultimately the commissioners to dictate those 2 hours of CE every year, that maybe we can make a bigger impact on reducing future injuries and illnesses in the fire service.
I know we've talked.
That sounds utopic, but that was the plan.
I know we've talked about making, for the past couple of years, having a required class like The Courage to be Safe or National Highway Transportation, but something along the 1851 side, just because it is supposed to be a policy, it's supposed to be something that our departments are following. I was really hoping Curtis was going to be here because I thought maybe that was a pitch towards that idea.
I think that's exactly where we're probably headed with that.
Okay.
I think having him make the presentation here was in hopes of some kind of recommendation from you all. If you'd want to make that without his presentation, we could go back to that, or we could get him here in September and do it. At this point,
I know a little more about that. I'm shocked that he wasn't here. He didn't call me either.
Yeah, something must have happened because
They have a program that they put together, a CAN program, for online for basically a CE type class. So, they were just finishing it. It was supposed to be done, but it's ostensibly a PowerPoint type program that any department could use for a CE. And it is their standard. It's been accepted all over the country. So it's not like we're promoting something that isn't accepted and basically factual and seen by everyone.
And that's what he showed at the – he did it in less than 30 minutes, but that was the PowerPoint he showed the commissioners at their last meeting. And That's what you were going to see today. So,
yeah.
But I think the intent, at least from speaking to Chairman Steelman and some of the others, was to let's get the process started and treat it the same as we've done the Courage to Be Safe and the highway safety and things of that nature. So,
I think in principle we could probably agree that it's a good idea, and maybe we'll just get him to come to the commission meeting again and pitch the formal program again, I guess, for lack of a better term.
And I think we also discussed, because we also discussed the traffic incident management, if it should be a one and done, because I wrestle with the recruits coming through my department, getting the traffic incident management program knocked out before they even leave the academy, haven't been to the fire station, and now they're good for a 35-year career, never have to revisit it. In reality, in the last 6 years, that program has been revised 4 times.
Yeah.
So, you know, whether it's the cancer awareness or the traffic incident management or even Courage to Be Safe, if it really should be a one and done or it should be revised from time to time or revisited.
Chief, what I would like to see, and I don't know, I know we it's hard to track that, and the focus is truly not on that in a sense that it's not tracked, is mental health. Mm-hmm. I think mental health, I think the fire service has had a rough year, and I think we need to look into a way to track some of that stuff, but to focus on the mental health of our firefighters and wellness.
Well, that is one of the items that the Health and Wellness Committee is currently working on and addressing.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only place I've seen any work done towards that specifically.
I don't know how you would formulate this, but as far as our recommendations go, adding in that this committee believes that mandatory CEs on a rotating basis for mental health, for cancer prevention, and for highway safety should be incorporated on a rotating basis.
When you say rotating basis, what, I'm not following, like yearly or each year we revisit it?
A couple of years, and this is just for discussion, but I mean, those are three important issues. Obviously, the highway safety one is mental health, absolutely, and cancer prevention. We're still going to be battling cancer for another 15 years at least, even with the way the standards have changed. So probably longer than that. So I know that they go, we're on record, and I still say this, they go crazy when we want to add hours to CE. I mean, everybody goes bananas.
But that's why we're not adding hours,
right,
to CEs. We're just dictating two of them.
Instead, do a rotating, but with the emphasis on these three every 2 years or whatever. So at least you catch people as they come through. Let's make it a mandatory CE.
And just another point for consideration, you know, Commissioner Jones is chairing this ad hoc committee to review all the rules in 435. And within 435, you've got two rules, 25 and 29, which require Courage to Be Safe and the traffic incident management. What could end up coming from that is something that Jim just said, just package it all in there and word it different so that it's an annual thing, but it rotates or however they want to do it. So I think we're headed in the right direction. I think we got to get there. And you know, maybe a focus. The commissioners are going to get started on this review here pretty quick, and I think there's some brilliant people on those two committees. I expect a lot of good to come from that as we move forward.
Okay. Chief McAuliffe, it looks like you have a comment. Or
as always.
No, we welcome it.
So I agree with everything that's being said. I think mental awareness aspect, the cleaning your PPE following 18th is important, cancer awareness. But I also think, go back to your report. In the very back, when it talks about what are the recommendations, there is no mention of mental health. There is no mention of traffic safety. So I think if you're going to really take your data that you're collecting and make it meaningful, then focus whatever CE or whatever on the results of the data instead of, and I'm going to use the term, flavor of the month programs. Because we all know in a couple more years, there's going to be some other issue that's going to be what I call the flavor of the month, whatever it is. So are we chasing those flavors, or are we actually addressing what we have through our data? And I think that's where we need to be. I'm not saying don't do those programs. I'm just saying make sure that those programs are related to why you are collecting this data. Make the data meaningful by formulating a good educational response to it. That's my comment.
It's very good.
Yeah, I think that's one of the we're trying to thread a needle here on a couple of these issues where we're trying to take the report, the empirical data that we clearly have, and dictate our future training with hopes of impacting safety and health and wellness. We have a health and wellness committee that we didn't have 5 years ago. We have a new committee that's revisiting 435 that didn't exist until just a month, 2 months ago. And I don't think they've even yet to have a meeting, or maybe they're about to. So I think we're making strides in the right direction. And I guess the question is almost like where the territory stops and starts. Like, so we can maybe add this in as a recommendation. In reality, all we're really doing is bringing the subject to light in a discussion where nothing is going to hardcore change in it for next year's CE or next year's injury report. So I think it's all good. Every bit of this is good. It's just knowledge that we're sharing, and we're trying to get the word out. So I think we're like just trying to navigate where the responsibility should fall.
How about this then? How about identify issues from the report and target them as on rotating mandatory CE? And would that fit into the biennial, the 2 year every, would that fit in okay to the biennial?
So once again, I'm it's just me being ignorant on my mind. When you're saying rotating CEs, you're talking about the 2 hours that we're talking about where the commission motion. So we already have that in place. So we're already moving forward with that. What gets placed in those 2 hours is clearly going to rotate from year to year. So that's already the process. So what we mandate this year for those 2 hours of CE, that doesn't mean that's what we're doing next year or the year after that. That's going to change because it's going to be dependent upon this committee and the commissioners and the Health and Wellness Committee looking at the injury report.
Because we could have a different picture next year. Isn't it going to have to be every 2 years? So that we can track it through the inspections?
I think they're...
That's just a
no, it wouldn't have to be every 2 years. I mean, they could come back and check, hey, did you complete this last year? I mean, it's been in that inspection period. But I think maybe to capture what Jim's saying and catch everything that's been said, I think maybe a recommendation in here from you all that supports, moving forward, supports requiring this report to be annual CE and focusing on different areas, problem areas, whatever you want to call it. I think just the recommendation supporting that would help the commissioners moving forward in cleaning all this up and figuring out exactly what they want that to look like. But I think to get that recommendation from you all, this is a great idea and maybe a step further in rotating topics or however you want to do that. Just kind of it supports what the Health and Wellness Committee is saying. It's supporting what the commissioners are wanting to say, and I think it's supporting what everybody's sitting here saying today. Just putting it into words, sending it forward as a recommendation from this committee.
Yeah, because personally, I'm encouraged because 3 years ago, none of this discussion even happened.
No, and you and I have had conversations for years that we've got to get to where people have to look at this. They need to take advantage of this information. Look, now I think we're there. Now we're just trying to figure out the semantics. So everybody's on board with this.
Yeah, because for years we were frustrated where we would look at this report that somebody had put a tremendous amount of time and effort in, and it clearly paints a picture of something, and we would approve it, sign it, and it got stuck in a drawer somewhere, and not another living soul in the fire service did anything about what the report said or didn't say. Mm-hmm. I mean, this report also clearly paints a clear picture that in a lot of places we're doing great stuff. I mean, the firefighters, the fire departments, are trending in the right direction. So there's more good that could be brought out of this report than negative. But if there's a negative connotation that can be fixed through training and ultimately reduce an injury or numerous injuries down the road, everybody seems to be on board with that. So right now, it almost seems like the problem we have is we almost have too many committees all trying to work on solving the same problem, which is not a problem. That's a
getting thing. Really close to having them all saying the same thing, too.
We are saying the same thing, yeah.
I think that's where we're at, so.
Because the Health and Wellness Committee is talking about the mental health issues as well. That they've even done a presentation mm-hmm. in front of the commission, so mm-hmm. They're moving forward with that.
Can I have a question? On the zero reporting, is there a, so that we get 100% reporting every year in some fashion, and maybe it might be a reminder to some departments, is there 1 month in a year that we can tell them, if you haven't had an injury all year, report zero on this month, that way we get 100% reporting?
You know, I've thought about that very thing, and you know, maybe it fits somewhere along the lines of when you're renewing, you know, when the department renews everybody's certification, which is in October, they're in FIDO already. Go in and check a box or something in there, and here we are putting more work on Grace again, but check a box, we did not experience any injuries in the last 12 months or something like that, which could help us capture that. Because if they don't check that box, then maybe we need to do a better job of going in and find out, hey, did you not report something? You didn't indicate over here that you did. And I know that's making FIDO more complicated or whatever, but it might capture exactly.
It's
you're just checking a box.
It's one time in a
month. Yeah.
Even if there's a reminder when you do your – for them to go back and check, it's only – I mean, they've got it simple now. You just hit zero.
Well, and I think we're seeing a lot of folks actually reporting that they haven't had any, you know.
Because now it just asks you if you haven't, I mean, it's a little red box and you just check no and goes on. So I just did it the other day for May.
Yeah, ooh. Super easy to report no
injuries. Yeah,
it is. Apparently not that easy.
Well, I will have to say I was with you because I looked at it and I had April, May, and I hadn't done either one of them because I hadn't had any injuries.
Yeah.
Chief Lisco, so the recommendations you just read, will we see those recommendations on some of those requests on the 2021 report?
Those are the recommendations from your last meeting in March, all right, for this report right here. So that list will again be back in front of the commissioners in July. Okay, that is
so
a current
I know it was brought about the traffic to I guess, show that traffic incident, which is not in this report yet, correct, on this one here? But it's a recommendation, mm-hmm. So that's going to be in 2021. We'll be able to see those separations that was recommended during the...
If that gets adopted by the commissioner. You're getting a little ahead of this. They have
to
say...
I just want to make sure that...
I can't tell you you're going to see it until they say, yes, we want to see this.
Right, and so... Right.
Then our IT people have to do some programming to make it available for people to use. And we're already halfway through 2021.
Right.
Will this happen for 2021? It could, but it won't reflect everything that's happened already in the year. You know what I mean?
It's probably more realistic to expect that you'll see it in the 22 report. Which we'd be looking at sitting here in 23.
And I think it goes back to what was just mentioned about the training, using this as training programs. And so in 2021, which it hasn't been adopted yet, at some point we're going to be able to separate a COVID type of tracking, correct? And so at that point it's going to be real high. And so that we're going to be talking about COVID in 2022 of the issues that happened in 2020 or 2021.
Mm-hmm.
And so... I was just wondering if the recommendation that you just read off of there have been implemented, and it have not. Of course, the commission's got to approve them.
Mm-hmm.
And so some of what we've recommended back in March, and not necessarily won't pertain to the once it gets adopted there forward, because that's not the issue no more, as an example. And so I do know, and you mentioned, and I think the traffic is one of those where it's not tracked, separated now, but the instances are happening now. And so we may not truly be able to set up a program for that because we're using numbers that are in the past, not numbers that are...
Well, and unfortunately, we're always going to be that way. We're always a year behind.
Well, we'll actually be 2 years behind, won't we, by the time the CE recommendations fall into place technically?
I don't know. This meeting will be in July. They could formulate a rule sitting here in July that gets finally adopted in October, and it could be effective in October. So you could see it for the next CE cycle, which is 21-22.
Right, but I don't think basing the knowledge off of the 2020 report.
Yeah,
so we're 2 years behind.
Nothing we can do about that.
Right,
I mean, that's how statistics work. you're always a year or two behind. So. But I think we've all already seen we're doing pretty good. Everything that's been done up to now is starting to, we're seeing where it's working. So it's a continuation.
And back to your comment about the 74% reporting, doing a little looking myself, as far as the number of reporting agencies, 762, I believe.
756.
756. Yeah. At least 100 of those agencies are three or less people. So, like you say, there's a chance that there just was nothing to report from mm-hmm. those numbers. If you look at the number of firefighters in Texas, the number of agencies reporting, how many of those firefighters were represented? That number is clearly not 74%. It could actually be as high as 95% or higher.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's what you were trying to clarify.
Out of 35,000 certified firefighters in the state right now, probably 10,000-11,000 of those are individual certificate holders, whether they're retirees or they're exploring other career options right now or whatever, and they're still maintaining their certification. So 25,000 of the 35,000 people we certify work for fire departments. And so, yeah, I think we're capturing 95-96% of the firefighting force across Texas that are regulated, that we're seeing these kind of numbers. 6,000 injuries for a year.
And by the way, I just misspoke. It's not 100, it's 200. 200 yeah. of the agencies have less than three right. people. 100 of them have only one person. So when you say you got, 35 agencies that didn't report anything, and they might only be representing 35 people.
And that's where maybe that little checkbox at the renewal time, that we didn't have any injuries last year. Now all of a sudden we figure out internally we are getting 100% reporting. They just didn't have anything to report.
Right. Okay. Any comments from anybody that is visiting today? Finally.
Mr. Chairman, commissioners, city staff, my name is Glenn Trahan. I've actually never been told I need to talk about it. I apologize to you, Chairman. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to reiterate, Grace mentioned the motion that's on the floor right now, that it wasn't just for 1851. It was for your personal body being deconned after the call. Everybody in here knows that Texas makes the best barbecue because of the slow smoke brisket. That slow smoke exposure that we're being exposed to in our gear. Yes, the gear is contaminated, but as are we. Our apparatus is contaminated. So the Health and Safety Committee, when Grace mentioned we clean everything, it was not just the 1851 compliance gear clean. It was everything. Us, our apparatus, and our gear.
Thank you. That's a good point. Perhaps, Jim, that's why it was such a vague statement. Clean everything.
Well, that's okay. So then the statement needs to be a little more specified then. Because I agree, clean everything. But he makes a good point about cleaning the cabs. Shower in an hour. I mean, I'm sure a lot of that gets lost, but we're in a business that people need a little more specificity sometimes to follow through on different things. And then let's be specific about what the intent of that statement was. Clean cab is an easy moniker that everybody's using. So clean cab should be included in there.
shower within the hour or self-decontamination or whatever you want to call it should be included in there. And then 1851 should cover the rest.
So the list we're looking at on page 127 was last year's recommendations. So that's not what we're working off of. But there was a comment of clean everything often. So we're trying to use that as a stepping stone to...
For our recommendations.
Our recommendations, yes. For this year,
yes.
For 1851 and / showering, so, decon cabs.
So I guess we could say clean cab concept and shower in the hour is the...
Is there anything else
that
should
be
included
in that?
The flavor of the month.
Flavor of the month. Shower within the hour.
Is there anything else that should be included in that?
I don't know.
I think that
self-decon,
I think, would be a lot better because self-decon's on scene. You can self-decon with wipes, getting out of your stuff. I think that's a better concept than just the shower within the hour because,
yeah, I think self-decon would be a lot better.
Self-decon.
So,
and that recommendation?
Yeah.
It's a long one.
Somebody eloquently put that in words for us.
So do you just say clean everything to include? I mean, take that and expand it out to include?
I guess my fear would be, could we be omitting something that we'll think about tomorrow or a month from now, and it's not on that list?
Well, absolutely.
Yeah, could we just leave it open-ended?
Yeah.
You know, what you've done for me in this discussion is you've clarified clean everything often, which didn't mean anything to me 20 minutes ago, and now it actually makes a lot of sense.
You put it in brackets as an example. Your cab, yeah. Self-decon.
Yeah. Clean everything, including not limited to clean cab.
Yeah,
clean
cab. Tools. Your
tools.
Yeah, everything.
Make sure you're following 1851.
To include equipment and personnel.
For the report, for the a change in the report, we asked that Grace put some categories under clean everything. Just list out some references to what's intended there, what you're talking about.
Equipment and personnel.
Yeah.
Examples of what that means.
Yeah. Because that list I read earlier, it was on page 91 last time of their notebook. I'm sure it's going to go back to them again, and so we want to add to that and just put some categories underneath there that what's being referenced. When you say everything, this is what they're talking about. Persons, cabs, equipment, you know, PPE, all of it.
We don't need a motion on this at all, right? This is just a recommendation and discussion.
No, I think an overall motion
to approve
recommending the you like the report and you recommend this
Make
be the
accept it with our notations.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah, with some noted recommendations that'll be outlined in the
Okay.
I'll make that motion.
Okay. Anybody second?
Second.
Okay. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? So moved.
Item number 11, subjects for future agenda items.
Any questions or suggestions or recommendations?
I would assume when that 435 committee meets that we're going to have things to discuss.
To have what?
We're going to have things to discuss after the 435 committee meets.
Oh, I would imagine once they get going and start bringing stuff back. I don't know how they're going to work that. If they're going to do it all at once or if they're going to start just sending stuff as they get to it.
Okay. I don't have anything to add, so.
Okay.
Item number 12, future meeting dates.
Deb, I believe we already have that on the calendar.
Mm-hmm. September 16th.
Okay.
And December
2nd. Got it.
I will not be here.
Item 13, adjourned meeting.
I'll entertain a motion.
Second.
Second.
Keith Smith, second. All those in favor?
Aye.
So moved. We'll adjourn. Thank you, everybody that's come to visit us today. It was good to see a decent-sized crowd. Look like we're trying to get back to normal coming out of the last crazy 15, 18 months, so I'll adjourn the meeting.